Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
It's just before sunrise, on Saturday, June 24th, 1944. In the woods by Lake Hickory, North Carolina, floodlights cast long shadows over a bustling campfire turned construction zone. Dozens of volunteers, men too old for the war, women in handkerchiefs, even off-duty soldiers, work throughout the night. Hammers clang against nails. Handsaws whir through pine boards. A line of cars, ambulances, and even a borrowed hearse winds down a dirt road toward a freshly painted stone building. Each vehicle carries a precious burden, a child stricken with polio. By the time the sun peaks over the pines, the first stretcher is gently lifted out. A little girl, feverish and limp, is rushed past rows of canvas tents into a newly erected ward. Nurses in crisp white uniforms stand ready by rows of donated cots. One volunteer wipes sweat and sawdust from his brow as another calls out, "Bed ready over here." In a corner, a machine pumps rhythmically, the sigh of an iron lung helping a boy breathe. Parents hover anxiously at the camp's entrance, eyes full of worry and fragile hope. Just 54 hours ago, this place was a summer camp. Now it's a lifeline. The people of Hickory have built a hospital out of sheer desperation and love. And every second counts. Hello, friend. Welcome back to Hometown History, the podcast that takes a stroll down the main streets and back alleys of the past to uncover how local stories shaped the world. I'm Shane Waters, and today we're exploring the story of a community that accomplished the impossible. In the summer of 1944, as a deadly polio outbreak threatened North Carolina, the small city of Hickory built a full-scale polio hospital in just 54 hours. It was later dubbed the Miracle of Hickory. How did ordinary people in the midst of World War II pull together to fight a terrifying disease on the home front? And what does their courage teach us about resilience and cooperation? To understand it, we need to go back to a time of fear and uncertainty. Back to the late spring of 1944, when polio came to Hickory. In the first half of the 20th century, few things frightened American parents more than polio. Also known as infantile paralysis. Polio was a highly contagious virus that could strike without warning. One day a child might have a slight fever. The next day they could be paralyzed, unable to move or even breathe on their own. There was no cure and no vaccine yet, only primitive treatments like immobilizing braces or scalding hot compresses to ease the symptoms. If the virus paralyzed the chest muscles, patients had to rely on a bulky mechanical ventilator, known as an iron lung, to stay alive. Polio tended to surge in the hot summer months, striking mostly children, though adults weren't immune. Even President Franklin D. Roosevelt had been left wheelchair-bound by polio years earlier. In the earlier decades, big city outbreaks caused panic. A 1916 epidemic killed thousands. And just the year before, in 1943, a major outbreak hit places like Chicago. But in the 1940s, North Carolina was about to face one of its worst epidemics. Picture the summer of 1944. World War II is raging overseas. Many local doctors and nurses are away serving in the military. On the home front, Americans deal with wartime rationing and constant worry for their loved ones abroad. In North Carolina, an unseen enemy was creeping in: polio virus. That year, polio cases spiked dramatically across the state, with 861 cases in 1944 alone. Among the hardest hit areas was the western Piedmont region around Hickory in Catawba County. The first case in Catawba County was confirmed on June 1, 1944. Within 24 hours, 6 cases were identified in the county and 68 across the region. It became clear that polio was spreading fast. Local newspapers, like the Hickory Daily Record, began reporting new cases almost daily. Families of sick children frantically sought help, traveling to the nearest major hospital with a polio ward: Charlotte Memorial Hospital, 55 miles south in Charlotte. But soon, even Charlotte's polio ward was full, with army tents pitched on its lawn to handle the overflow. Desperate parents driving down from the mountains learned there was no room left in Charlotte for their ailing kids. Many got only as far as Hickory before being turned back by the grim news. Fear gripped the region. People didn't yet know exactly how polio spread. Some suspected flies or mosquitoes. Others worried it was in the water or even the air. Rumors and folk theories flew. Towns with known polio cases were shunned. Travelers would roll up their windows tight as they passed through. Even in the stifling June heat, afraid to breathe the air. Memories of earlier epidemics had taught people to fear public gatherings. In mid-June, North Carolina's Board of Health warned parents to keep children away from crowds. No playgrounds, no swimming pools, no summer camps, no movie matinees, not even church or Sunday school. Hickory, a town of about 15,000, was known for its tight-knit community and industrious spirit. But by June 1944, that spirit was tested by polio. On June 7th, the Hickory paper announced the area's first case. A 17-month-old girl from town had fallen ill and had been taken to Charlotte Memorial. Within days, more local children were stricken: a 4-year-old girl, then a 10-year-old boy, then a 12-year-old. The numbers climbed steadily. By June 14th, at least 10 cases had been reported in 3 counties around Hickory. Parents were terrified. This was the start of a full-blown epidemic. Local health officials urged the public to stay calm, but take precautions. Dr. H.C. Wims, Hickory City physician and the Catawba County public health officer, spoke on the radio to the press to quell panic. Community hysteria does not help at all, he warned, pleading with residents not to become panic-stricken. By June 16th, Dr. Wims had no choice but to officially declare an epidemic in Catawba County and ban all children 12 and under from public gatherings. The headline in the Hickory Daily Record blared, "Polio epidemic bars public places to tots 12 and under." Dr. Wims was quoted in the paper, sounding the alarm. An epidemic of infantile paralysis definitely exists in Catawba County. He ordered that children stay away from churches, theaters, playgrounds, swimming pools, anywhere kids might congregate. At the same time, he again urged calm, noting that panic would help no one and emphasizing the importance of early treatment. Parents must call a doctor at the first sign of symptoms. As June wore on, the situation in Hickory grew more dire by the day. New cases popped up, not just in the city, but in surrounding rural communities. On June 19th, over one weekend, seven more cases were reported in Catawba County. The evidence was pointing to possible causes. Several of those patients had recently been swimming in local streams or ponds, or drinking raw milk from backyard cows, or living in homes without window screens, supporting the theory about flies spreading the virus. These clues were all local officials had, since the true culprit, virus-laden fecal contamination in water, wasn't fully understood yet. Meanwhile, the nearest hospitals were overwhelmed. A visiting epidemiologist from the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, the organization founded by FDR, later nicknamed the March of Dimes, arrived in North Carolina to assist. But when news came that Charlotte Memorial and even a specialized orthopedic hospital in Gastonia could accept no more polio patients from outside their areas, it was clear that Hickory and its neighbors were on their own. Something had to be done immediately. The lives of dozens of children and potentially hundreds more hung in the balance. This is where our story truly begins, with a town faced with a frightening question. When no one else can help, can we save ourselves? On the morning of Thursday, June 22nd, 1944, three men met in Hickory's high school auditorium under urgent circumstances. Dr. H.C. Wims, the county health officer, Dr. Gaither Hahn, a local physician who chaired the county chapter of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, and Dr. C.H. Crabtree, the NFIP's state representative, gathered to confront the crisis head-on. Word had just arrived from Charlotte. Every polio bed in that city was now filled, even the army tents on the lawn. No more patients from Hickory or anywhere else could be admitted. Gastonia's orthopedic hospital was full too. If a child in the Hickory area fell ill, there was literally nowhere to send them for care. The responsibility to treat these sick kids had fallen on these three local leaders. They realized instantly that Hickory needed its own treatment center, and fast. Other communities might have waited for state or federal authorities to step in, but this was wartime, and resources were stretched thin. The decision was made then and there. Hickory would build an emergency polio hospital itself, with a daunting plan, essentially creating a new hospital from scratch. But necessity left no alternative. As one account later put it, It was out of necessity, generosity, and compassion that the miracle of Hickory was born. They immediately set about finding a suitable location. Schools, churches, and public halls were considered, but those in town were too small or too close to population centers. Fortunately, Dr. Hahn had already been mulling an idea, a rather daring one. Just 3 miles north of Hickory, on the wooded shores of Lake Hickory, lay a 62-acre property known as the Lake Hickory Health Camp. It was a fresh air camp built during the Depression as a charitable summer camp for underprivileged kids. The camp had one sturdy horizontal stone building, constructed by WPA labor a few years earlier, and lots of open land. Crucially, the camp was county-owned, which meant Dr. Wims, as public health officer, had the authority to commandeer it for emergency use. The three doctors agreed unanimously. The health camp would be transformed into a temporary polio hospital. Within half an hour of the meeting's start, Dr. Wims gave the order: evacuate the camp immediately. At that time, about 57 children were staying there for their summer respite. By that afternoon, buses and cars had taken them back home. A newspaper headline flashed the news that very day: new polio cases will be treated at health camp. Hickory was going to care for its own. Now the real race began. The trio of physicians essentially sketched out a battle plan on the spot. They divided up duties like a military operation. Dr. Wims, as the local authority, would oversee converting the camp, rounding up equipment, getting tents, and directing construction crews. Dr. Hahn took charge of communications and supplies, putting out calls for material, coordinating with local government, and securing whatever hospital furniture and gear he could find. Dr. Crabtree would tap to the National Foundation's resources, requesting funds, doctors, and nurses from outside Hickory. Each man picked up the phone and started mobilizing help, both locally and from across the state and nation. One of Dr. Hahn's first calls was to the editor of the Hickory Daily Record, the town's main newspaper. Within hours, the paper's presses rolled with an announcement calling for all hands on deck. Hickory's citizens learned that a polio treatment center was being set up at the old health camp and that volunteers, supplies, and donations were needed immediately. At that same time, local radio station WHKY interrupted regular programming with urgent bulletins. Announcers listed items required at the new hospital: baby cribs and beds, bedding and bandages, kitchen stoves, refrigerators, buckets, soap, even office furniture. Almost anything a hospital might need, because this one had nothing. They also begged for manpower: carpenters, electricians, plumbers, nurses, cooks, drivers, anyone who could swing a hammer, wield a paintbrush, or wash a load of laundry. And Hickory answered the call. Almost immediately, offers of help poured in. Three local lumber companies dispatched trucks loaded with fresh-cut pine lumber to the site that same day, free of charge. Construction crews of skilled tradesmen volunteered en masse, showing up with their own tools by sundown on June 22nd. The National Guard sent soldiers to clear trees and brush to make space for new buildings. The city of Hickory organized a prison work crew, inmates from a state penitentiary, to dig a 3-mile-long water line from town out to the remote camp, ensuring a steady water supply. Incredibly, even women prisoners from Raleigh were brought in to help run the camp's kitchen and laundry services. Civic organizations, church groups, and ordinary neighbors all stepped forward. One eyewitness recalled floodlights being set up around the camp so that the construction could continue throughout the night. And it did. Hickory's volunteers worked around the clock in shifts. The very next day, Friday, June 23rd, the work continued. Even as summer rainstorms rolled through, volunteers kept sawing and hammering in their ponchos. A local National Guard unit brought in heavy equipment to speed up the clearing of land for additional wards. Electricians from Duke Power wired the stone cabin and the newly constructed wooden barracks for electricity. By Friday afternoon, two large U.S. Army hospital tents arrived from Charlotte, procured by Dr. Crabtree, and were erected on site. Complete with wooden plank floors built by Hickory carpenters before the tents had even got there. The Army also contributed dozens of canvas cots and other equipment. Hickory's women were just as crucial to the effort. Seamstresses set up sewing machines in the high school gym and began cutting and stitching hospital gowns and linens after the newspaper put out a plea for their skills. Housewives scoured their attics and basements for spare electric fans, knowing the polio wards would be sweltering in the southern heat without them. They rustled up washing machines to donate and gathered toys to comfort the sick children. The city's cook and restaurant owners prepared trays of food, since the camp's own kitchen wasn't operational yet. Women in town took turns cooking hundreds of meals in their home kitchens and delivering them by car to the site. It truly was a community effort at every level. Neighbors helping neighbors, even if those neighbors were strangers from another county. By late afternoon on Saturday, June 24th, an astonishing transformation had taken place. It was just 54 hours after the idea was conceived. The Hickory Emergency Infantile Paralysis Hospital was ready to open its doors. A convoy of ambulances and cars were already en route, bringing the first patients. The initial medical staff was admittedly thin, only 12 nurses, all volunteers, to start with, plus a handful of local doctors. But more help was on the way. The truly hard part, treating dozens upon dozens of critically ill children, was about to begin. Hickory's brand new polio hospital officially opened on June 24, 1944. That first weekend, 16 patients were admitted. Many arrived in the arms of frantic parents. Others came in on stretchers, escorted by Red Cross workers. They came not just from Hickory, but from all over Western North Carolina, and even parts of Tennessee, South Carolina, and Virginia. The patients kept coming, one account noted, in cars, ambulances, even hearses lent by local undertakers. By the end of the hospital's first week, 45 patients filled the cots and tents, and another dozen sick children had been examined on site. Many more would follow. The conditions were basic and improvised, but the care was cutting edge for its time. The staff did everything known to modern medicine to fight polio. Wards were segregated by illness severity rather than by race or color. A deliberate decision by the organizers to treat all patients equally, black or white. In fact, Hickory's Emergency Hospital ended up treating 55 African-American patients alongside whites without formal segregation, likely the first integrated hospital setting in North Carolina's history. There was no time or space for prejudice in this all-hands fight for life. Inside the tents and hastily built wooden wards, the nurse applied the Kinney method of polio treatment, which was considered experimental but promising. This approach, pioneered by Australian nurse Sister Elizabeth Kinney, emphasized hot packs, warm baths, and gentle exercise to keep paralyzed limbs limber. It was a stark contrast to the traditional treatment of the day, which involved immobilizing paralyzed arms or legs in plaster casts and braces. At Hickory, under the summer canvas, you would see rows of small children wrapped in steaming wool blankets soaked in hot water, with nurses carefully massaging atrophied muscles. Buckets of hot water and piles of wooden cloths became familiar sights. The aroma of boiled wool and menthol lotions would linger in many patients' memories for a lifetime. The work was grueling and conditions far from ideal. Summer storms turned the camp's dirt lanes into mud. In the early days, before proper latrines and incinerators were set up, waste was burned on site to prevent any spread of contagion. The heat and humidity were oppressive. Nurses sweat through their white uniforms as they hurried between beds, checking fevers, and comforting frightened children. Many volunteers had never seen polio close up before. It was a heart-rending sight. Some children lay motionless, except for the rise and fall of their chests. Others whimpered in pain as the virus inflamed their spinal cords. A few, in critical condition, struggled for each breath until precious iron lungs could be obtained. An iron lung respirator arrived on June 23rd and saw its first use a few days later on a 27-year-old patient completely paralyzed from the chest down. That young man, named Boyce Rash, from Ashe County, sadly did not survive. He died on September 21st, one of the 12 casualties at Hickory. Only after his death did doctors discover he'd had a different paralysis illness, not polio at all. The psychological toll on the caregivers was enormous. Imagine building a hospital in 2 days and then immediately confronting a ward full of sick and disabled children fighting a terrifying disease. As the first deaths occurred, the nurses and volunteers took it hard. By early July, 3 young patients had died, and each loss shook the staff deeply. Many of these workers had bonded with the children under their care, and in a crisis like this, there was little time to process grief. Still, they pressed on, fueled by a sense of mission and flashes of hope. A child regaining the ability to wiggle her toes, or a fever finally breaking. Hickory's Emergency Hospital rapidly grew in those first weeks. Seeing the influx of patients, Dr. Hahn ordered construction of additional wards almost immediately. More wooden barracks went up, and the army sent even more tents. By the hospital's third week, it housed 92 patients and had expanded capacity to handle up to 100 at a time. The dusty road leading to the camp was oiled to keep down the clouds of dust from constant traffic. A second iron lung arrived as donations flowed in. Help was coming from far beyond Hickory as news of this extraordinary endeavor spread. Doctors and nurses from across the country answered the call that Dr. Crabtree and the NFIP had put out. Physicians from prestigious institutions like Harvard, Yale, Johns Hopkins, and many others arrived in Hickory to lend their expertise. Among them were infectious disease specialists, psychotherapists, and orthopedists, all descending on this makeshift camp hospital in rural North Carolina. The American Red Cross recruited and sent several hundred nurses to staff Hickory's wards. These included veteran nurses, as well as younger student nurses in training, nicknamed the Angels of Mercy by locals, who came from nursing schools up and down the East Coast. Many of these outside nurses were put up in private homes by Hickory residents for free, and the city even provided school buses to shuttle them to and from the camp each day. Hotel Hickory downtown also housed some of the medical staff, with costs covered by the National Foundation. One local hero was already on the ground from day one, Nurse Frances Allen. In fact, Frances Allen was the only public health nurse employed by Catawba County at the start of the epidemic. She became a linchpin of the Hickory operation. In her own words years later, Nurse Allen recalled the exhausting routine she undertook.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Doctors from Yale gave me specific instructions. Each home was to be visited to collect specimens when a new patient was admitted. These visits required a lot of travel from daylight to dark. I recall one visit in Watauga County that took me up a small unpaved road. I then had parked my car and walk about a quarter mile to the house. Of course, there were dogs to combat, but luckily, no dog bites. The family proved cooperative, and I collected and put on ice their specimens to take back to researchers. I traveled to Wilkes, Burke, Caldwell, and Alexander counties. I was in the hospital every day, where patients were treated by the Kenny Hot Pack method. Schools were closed, and children were asked to stay home rather than be in crowds. In fact, the whole town was somewhat quarantined for a time. Later, as the number of cases became fewer, the worst cases were transferred to Charlotte Memorial Hospital. Through July and August 1944, Hickory's improvised hospital held the line against polio. By summer's end, close to 300 patients had come through its doors. The community's selflessness was noticed and celebrated. Stone Crane, an American Red Cross disaster relief official who visited Hickory, praised what he saw as nothing short of extraordinary. He said it was the most outstanding example of cooperative effect he had witnessed in over 13 years of emergency work. Hickory's local newspaper editors proudly reprinted his words, holding them up as proof of what their town's unity had achieved. Yet even as the hospital succeeded in treating patients, a shadow hung over Hickory. The very name Hickory started to carry a stigma in the outside world. People began calling it Polio City. Some fearful residents of other towns avoided traveling to Hickory. A few local merchants worried that the city's economy would suffer if outsiders were too afraid to visit and do business. There were even factions within the community who resented the hospital's presence despite the good it was doing. They wanted life back to normal, and the sooner the hospital closed, the better. But others saw the miracle of Hickory as a badge of honor, a source of pride that outweighed any temporary loss of commerce. Though the word miracle implies heavenly intervention, one writer noted, the successful effort came about because of an abundance of courage and compassion. Hickory had turned what could have been a nightmare into a point of pride. By the fall of 1944, the worst of the polio outbreak in western North Carolina began to ebb, thanks in large part to the Hickory Hospital's containment and treatment efforts. The epidemic never spread far beyond the region. It was largely confined to 18 counties in the western part of the state. In total, Hickory Emergency Infantile Paralysis Hospital would treat 454 polio patients over about 9 months, and incredibly, only 12 of them would lose their lives, the lowest mortality rate of any polio hospital in the country at the time. What had started as a desperate local response was now being hailed as a model of effective, compassionate care. As early as July 1944, national media took notice of what was happening in Hickory. Reporters and photographers from Life magazine showed up at the camp to cover this remarkable story. In its July 31, 1944 issue, Life devoted 4 full pages to photographs of the Hickory Polio Hospital, showing nurses tending rows of children in their cots and volunteers carrying lumber and supplies. The images, black and white snapshots of determined faces and makeshift hospital tents, brought Hickory's heroism to millions of American readers. Around the same time, a short documentary film was produced by Paramount Pictures, titled Miracle of Hickory, narrated by Academy Award-winning actress Greer Garson. It played as a newsreel in movie theaters nationwide, inspiring audiences with the dramatic tale of a community that built a hospital overnight. Perhaps most famously, the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, NFIP, published a 32-page booklet late in 1944, titled The Miracle of Hickory. This official pamphlet, complete with photos and stories from the Hickory Hospital, was used as a fundraising tool by the NFIP. It portrayed Hickory as a triumph of American volunteerism and medical ingenuity in wartime. The phrase Miracle of Hickory actually comes from the title of this NFIP booklet, and it stuck. From then on, the 54-hour hospital was enshrined in history under that name. National magazines heaped praise on Hickory's people. In February 1945, Coronet magazine ran a feature on the town's polio battle, in which the author proclaimed, "At this moment, the town of Hickory became great for all time." The line referred to that mid-June day when Hickory citizens rose to meet the crisis, and it captured the pride that many felt. To outsiders, Hickory went from being an obscure Piedmont town to a symbol of community heroism. Back on the ground in Hickory, that pride was balanced by pure exhaustion. Many of the volunteers and staff had been going full tilt for months. But gradually, the patient load began to lighten. By late 1944, new polio cases in the area declined sharply as colder weather approached. The emergency hospital had done its job so well that by December, the National Foundation itself began suggesting it might be time to consolidate resources and transfer the remaining patients to larger facilities. Some in Hickory resented the idea, they felt their hospital should continue serving the region as long as it was needed. Others, mindful of the polio city stigma and ready to get back to normal, supported closing it as soon as feasible. In the end, the decision was made to close the Hickory Hospital in early 1945, once it became safe to do so. On March 5, 1945, with the epidemic truly waning, the remaining 87 patients were carefully moved in a grand convoy back to Charlotte Memorial Hospital, which now had open beds. This final transfer was an event itself, a mile-long motorcade of 12 ambulances and 70 cars carried the polio patients, ranging from just 10 months old to 29 years, down out of the foothills and back to Charlotte. The people of Hickory stood along the roadsides to wave goodbye. Many of the young patients and their parents wept upon departure. They had grown to love the Hickory staff who cared for them with such kindness. According to a newspaper report, the children left with mixed feelings because of the affection and care received in Hickory. The Hickory Daily Record editors wrote a fond editorial bidding au revoir to the departing kiddies, wishing them well and promising that Hickory's role in their lives would not be forgotten. And so in the spring of 1945, the miracle of Hickory officially came to an end. After 9 months of round-the-clock operation, the emergency hospital closed its doors. Almost overnight, the bustling camp by the lake fell silent again. Volunteers dismantled the army tents and packed away supplies. The borrowed cots and cribs were sent back to warehouses. All the temporary wooden additions, the makeshift wards and mess halls, were left standing for the moment. But the sense of urgency and crisis was gone. One local paper noted poignantly, "So ends the final chapter of the miracle of Hickory. It's history now." Yet in many ways, the story was only beginning to echo through history. In the coming years and decades, Hickory's extraordinary polio hospital would inspire countless people and even change the way America fought the disease. The miracle of Hickory left a legacy far beyond the summer of 1944. For one, it vindicated a new approach to polio treatment. The success of Sister Kinney's rehabilitation methods in Hickory, the hot packs, gentle exercise, and hydrotherapy, provided powerful evidence to skeptics in the medical establishment. Many children treated at Hickory recovered strength in their limbs that might have been lost under the old immobilization technique. What was once viewed as unorthodox therapy gained credibility, and polio care began to shift toward rehabilitation instead of just casting and embracing. The Hickory Hospital was also remarkable for its inclusivity during a segregated era. In total, patients from 74 counties across 5 states came to Hickory for treatment. Of the 454 admitted, 55 were African American, and 1 was Native American. And unlike at most Southern hospitals in 1944, these children were not separated into colored wards. They were cared for alongside the white patients, receiving the same compassion and therapy. This may have been the first instance in North Carolina where black and white patients were treated together in the same facility. It wasn't a loud act of social protest. It was born of practical necessity and basic humanity in a crisis. But it does stand as a quiet step forward, a preview of the integration that would slowly take hold in healthcare in the years to follow. The immediate physical legacy of the hospital itself was short-lived. After the war, the site was used temporarily to house returning World War II soldiers, and their families who needed a place to stay. In April 1957, the cluster of wooden buildings that Hickory's volunteers had thrown up so quickly were finally torn down to make way for a new National Guard armory on that spot. Only the original stone camp building remained. It still stands today in Hickory's JC Park, a humble monument to what took place there. A North Carolina Highway historical marker now stands near the site, erected in 2000 with an inscription reminding passerbys of the great outbreak of polio in June 1944 in the emergency hospital that stood 1/2 mile northeast, a quick summary of an amazing feat. The spiritual legacy of the miracle of Hickory has been far more enduring. The story became a cornerstone of March of Dimes fundraising in the late 1940s. In fact, the idea of the polio poster child, a cheerful child survivor used as the face of fundraising campaigns, originated in North Carolina's polio drives, influenced by Hickory's example. After the war, the National Foundation introduced its first official poster child in 1946, opting to present an optimistic image of recovery, guided by the Miracle of Hickory campaign, rather than a sad or frightening one. The sight of smiling young polio survivors, living proof of what donor dollars and community action could achieve, helped the March of Dimes galvanize Americans to give. It's no exaggeration to say that the Miracle of Hickory was used as inspiration in the nationwide effort that ultimately funded the vaccines to conquer polio. And conquer polio they did. A decade after Hickory, in 1955, Dr. Jonas Salk's polio vaccine was introduced to the public. Parents who remembered the horrors of polio lined up by the thousands to vaccinate their children. Within a few short years, polio outbreaks in America became a thing of the past. The disease that had closed playgrounds and haunted every summer practically vanished from the United States. But the example of Hickory lives on as a gold standard of community resilience. Every 10 years or so, local newspapers, historians, and the survivors themselves gather to commemorate what happened in that summer of 44. On the 50th anniversary in 1994, a reunion was held for patients and staff of the Hickory Polio Hospital. Elderly men and women came, some walking with canes and braces, others perfectly spry, all of them once children whose lives were touched by the miracle of Hickory. They shared stories of kindness, the nurse who sang lullabies at bedside, the day they took their first steps again with the help of a physical therapist, the way the townspeople adopted them as their own kids for those months. One prominent former patient was Harlan Boyles, who at 15 had been struck by polio and treated in Hickory. He recovered and later went on to become North Carolina's state treasurer. Boyles credited the Hickory effort with saving his life and giving him a chance to live a full life of service. Local historian Richard Eller, who grew up in Hickory, later reflected that the miracle of Hickory set a high bar for what a community can do. It became part of the town's identity. No one who lives in Hickory today needs to be reminded. Their hometown has a story, and it's one that makes them stand a little taller. In downtown Hickory, a public artwork commemorates the miracle. And every so often, when a new epidemic or health scare emerges in the news, someone brings up the tale of Hickory, North Carolina, and that time an entire hospital sprang up practically overnight because ordinary people decided it must be done. A retrospective article about Hickory's 1944 polio fight summed it up beautifully. The true miracle was not the building of a hospital in 3 days. It was how the people of Hickory opened their doors and hearts to help polio victims in need, while others simply gave in to fear. In a time of crisis, this community chose compassion over panic, action over helplessness. That is the lasting legacy of the miracle of Hickory. Friend, the story of the miracle of Hickory is more than just a chapter in a history book. It's a mirror reflecting what community spirit can achieve, even in the face of overwhelming fear. If the past few years have taught us anything, it's that the challenges of epidemic disease are not confined to history. During the COVID-19 pandemic, for example, we saw echoes of Hickory's story in modern form. Convention centers turned into emergency wards, neighbors sewing masks for one another, volunteers delivering meals to frontline workers. Crisis strikes, and ordinary people find extraordinary ways to come together. In 1944, the people of Hickory didn't have the medical miracles of vaccines or antivirals. They had ration books, war bond drives, and telegrams delivering bad news from the seas. They could have easily been paralyzed by despair when polio came to their doorstep. Instead, they picked up hammers and built hope with their hands. They exemplified what we today might call grassroots activism or mutual aid, terms that boil down to communities solving problems collectively when institutions are stretched too thin. One striking parallel is how Hickory's effort was described in wartime imagery. People called it the medical equivalent of war, a home front battle against an invisible enemy, fought with bandages and compassion instead of bullets. During COVID-19, we similarly heard metaphors of war against the virus and saw healthcare workers hailed as soldiers on the front lines. But Hickory's tale reminds us that entire communities are the army in such a war. It wasn't just doctors and nurses, though they were heroes indeed. It was everyone, from lumbermen to schoolteachers, from black prisoners to white socialites, each contributing what they could. Victory against polio didn't come from one miracle cure in 1944. It came from thousands of small acts of courage and kindness knitted together. There's also a lesson in how Hickory responded to fear. In any epidemic, fear can spread faster than the disease itself. In Hickory, some wanted to flee or stigmatize the sick. We saw that initially with the Polio City label, but the community's leaders actively pushed back against panic. They educated. They communicated transparency through radio and newspapers, and they issued common sense precautions without descending into hysteria. In our own times, whether dealing with a pandemic or any disaster, we grapple with misinformation and fear. Hickory's story offers a hopeful example. When guided by reason, empathy, and transparency, people can resist the pull of panic and instead channel their energy into positive action. The miracle of Hickory also resonates a story of unity across divides. In 1944, the South was segregated and the nation deeply divided in many ways. But at Hickory's polio hospital, for a brief moment, those divisions fell away. Disease didn't discriminate, and neither did the caregivers. That example speaks to us today as well. Calamity can remind us of our common humanity, whether it's a virus, a natural disaster, or any crisis. We are stronger and more humane when we face it together, without prejudice. The integrated wards of Hickory were a quiet preview of progress, born not from politics, but from shared purpose. Finally, consider the legacy of hope that Hickory gave to the world. The images of smiling children recovering in Hickory's tents went far and wide, inspiring donations to the March of Dimes, which funded the research for the polio vaccine. In a very real sense, that little emergency camp helped bring about the vaccine that ended polio's terror. Hope is contagious, too. A positive story in the midst of a grim time can galvanize people even more than fear does. When we face daunting challenges today, climate change, global pandemics, social strife, remembering stories like Hickory's can galvanize us. It shows us that solutions start locally, with regular folks rolling up their sleeves. Listening to the voices from 1944 Hickory across the years, we hear not just a tale of one town's triumph, but a message. When trouble comes, look to your hometown. You may find that the miracle you need is already there, waiting in the willing hands and generous hearts of your neighbors. I'm Shane Waters. Every hometown has a story. This one was built in 54 hours out of hope, hard work, and a community's love. Good night.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.